Getting Back to Normal, the Great Depression Recovery Toolkit is a four-part series aimed at helping the millions of Americans who have been laid off and are struggling to keep their heads above water financially and emotionally. The goal of this toolkit is to help you get back to normal as quickly as possible. In order to help you get back to normal, we're tackling four different areas: mental, physical, financial, and career. So this is part four, your career. In part one, we got your confidence back. In part two, we made sure you could survive financially. In part three, we showed you how to boost your energy so you can get out there and get a job. And so in part four, we're going to do our best to show you tips and tricks to help you land that job. And so I've brought in America's top job recruiter and Dr. Phil's go-to job expert. His name is Tony Becerra, and he's the author of several books, including his latest, which is fantastic. It's called Unbeatable Resumes. He's the owner and president of Babich & Associates, the oldest recruitment and job placement firm in Texas. So, Tony, thank you so much for coming on here and sharing your insight and wisdom with us.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. Thank you so much.
Okay, so this is part four of this four-part series. And we're kind of counting on you, Tony, because this is the big one, right? This is the big one. This is getting the job. And the whole idea of this program is getting back to normal. And for so many people who've lost their job, who have become unemployed, they are at kind of the end of the rope. Maybe they've been unemployed for 6 months or a year, and they feel a little bit hopeless, a little bit helpless. They're out there trying to do the things that they know they should do, but nothing seems to be working. And so I'm hoping that we can talk for the next few minutes and really show them some tips and some ideas and strategies to help them get back to normal and to get a job.
We can.
I like it. All right. So talk to me about what happens after 6 months of being unemployed. You've mentioned it before about hitting a wall. Tell me about what that wall is.
Well, first of all, everybody has to recognize that next to death of a spouse, death of a child, death of a parent, coupled with divorce, the fourth most emotional thing we do is look for a job. In the past history of looking for a job, it has been easier. As we know, this is the roughest recession that we've ever been in. I was reading the other day that since December of 2007, the U.S. has lost 7 million jobs. There's been a drop of 23% in the rate of new businesses that were formed since 2007. And every recession that we've come out of since World War II has taken about 6 months to come out of. Except the last three, the one in 90 and 91 took 15 months. The recession of 2001 took 39 months. And according to McKinsey, this one's going to take 60 months. Now, I'm not going over this to depress anybody or further make you sadder about the situation, but everybody has to realize exactly what they're dealing with. So we've got an emotional situation, both on the part of the people that are looking for jobs, as well as the people that are hiring. They're just as afraid of making a mistake in the hiring process because they're not hiring all that many people. They're operating their business out of doubt, uncertainty, and fear. And if you're a candidate looking for a job and you realize that they are operating out of doubt, uncertainty, and fear, then you know better how to deal with interviewing so that you can show them what's going to make you a better employee than anybody they could hire. There's a tendency after people have been looking for a job for a while, about 6 months, they hit what I call the six-month wall. They start really getting depressed, if not clinically depressed, emotionally depressed, and they start thinking about, I'll never find a job, it's never going to happen, and it just spirals down. Well, the key to that is to develop a systematic approach to looking for a job so that if you do what John Wooden says, focus on the process and don't focus on the result, you don't have to worry about the result. But it takes massive, massive, massive action. and it takes an action plan that becomes very, 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 very detailed that you have to follow on a daily basis, which takes a lot of discipline so you can focus on the process and then you don't have to worry about the result of whether or not you're going to get a job.
Tony, so you mentioned something, you've mentioned several things here that I think are very important. The first, and it's something that I actually had never considered before, and you talked about people who are a little nervous, a little fearful, a little afraid, concerned, but you weren't talking about the people who were unemployed. You're talking about the people who have the jobs, who going out and looking for new candidates. Those are the people who are a little bit afraid?
You know, we talked about the fourth most emotional thing that people do. I submit to you, the fifth most emotional thing that people do is hire. We've got a world economy that's on the verge of we don't know. We've got compliance policies that the government has put upon. You know, every company in the United States spends $8,600 a year per employee just to comply with the government. Now, I'm not here to rail against the government, but when you have compliance issues, when you have healthcare issues, when you have tax issues that every business in the United States has to deal with, and they're afraid of it, and they don't know what's going to happen a year or two or 3 years down the line, they look at the politics of the country and it seems to be zapping them. They're sitting there wondering, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to be around the next couple of years. So yeah, I know I need to hire somebody, but I'm afraid of making a mistake. I can't afford to make a mistake in the hiring process. Well, what that leads to is that leads to operating out of fear of loss rather than vision of gain. And you all know what happens when we approach any endeavor out of fear. We just don't do very well with it. So when we approach that person that we think we want to hire, we're scared. We're scared we're going to make a mistake. We're afraid of everything. So that fear comes across in the interviewing and the hiring process. So one very important thing that candidates have to do when they get into the interviewing situation is make it clear to a prospective employer that they're not a risk, that they don't need to be fearful of them, that if they hire them, they're going to work harder and be a better employee than anybody else they can interview. So that that employer sees them as not just doing a good job for them, but also being the less risk of any of the people they're talking to.
It's so interesting. There's such a psychological component to this. And I never would have thought that if I'm looking for a job and I go in to interview, that the person sitting across from me, who is interviewing me, who has the job, is almost as anxious as I am.
Oh, he's scared to death. And it's really interesting. I read one of the so-called authorities in finding a job. He's a career counselor, but he's not really, never found anybody a job that I know of. But he speaks in his book about the employer you interview with really wants to hire you. Well, that's not true.
That would be nice if that were the case, wouldn't it?
The employer you're interviewing with is scared to death that he's going to make a mistake. Look, there are four things that a hiring authority is asking you if you're a candidate. Can you do the job? Do we like you? And that do we like you amounts to 40% of the hiring decision. Are you a risk? And that amounts to 30% of the hiring decision. And then the fourth thing is, can we work the money out? If the first three things, can you do the job, do we like you, and are you a risk, if those get answered in the right way, the money, that's the easiest part of all. That only amounts to 10% of the hiring situation. But that risk part is one of the things that's paramount in a hiring authority's mind, because they don't want to make a mistake. And when you start operating that way, then you get scared and you look at the glass as half empty instead of half full. And I've never met a candidate, I don't know about you, Robert, but I've never met any candidate that was perfect. So when a candidate goes into interview they need to realize that that employer is asking for those four things. The two most important things that he or she is asking is, do we like you, and are you a risk? Well, liking somebody, I mean, you can be likable in the interviewing situation. You can't necessarily control the culture of an organization you're going into, but you can mitigate any risk that you might pose to a prospective employer.
Well, let's talk about that. How can we minimize the risk that we may have in trying to get a job?
Well, first of all, you have to recognize that you've got them. I can't tell you the number of candidates I've interviewed over the years, and I've been doing this since 1973, that, well, I'm not a risk. Are you kidding? I'm not a risk. No, nobody that's ever hired me is a risk, has thought I was a risk. But everybody's a risk. If you've been the president of your own company or your own firm, if you've been at a job too long or you haven't been at enough or you've been at too many jobs, you've had one job every year for the last 3 years, or you've been out of work for 6 or 7 months, or you're too old or too young or too tall or too short or too fat or too skinny or too whatever, too pretty, not pretty enough, whatever. Everybody is a risk or has some risky factors in their background. So the first thing you need to do is say to yourself, in the eyes of a hiring authority, how am I a risk? If I've been out of work for 6 months, I pose a risk to a hiring authority, because a hiring authority, even though he knows there are 12 million people out there looking for a job, half of them are unemployed and half of them are unhappy in their job, he knows that the market is difficult. He or she is still looking at your resume and saying, Robert, you've been out of work for 6 months. What's with this? And you need to be able to come up with a very good business reason as to why you've been out of work for that long. If you haven't advanced in your career, if you've been at the same place too long, if you've had 3 jobs in 3 years, you've got to realize what is a hiring authority looking at my background or who I am and what I'm doing and what kind of risks do they see? So recognize what those risks are and then offset those risks with good business reasons as to why the situation is what it is.
Well, let's talk about that. I'm guessing that most of the listeners, their biggest risk would be, listen, I was laid off 6 months ago, a year ago. I've been beaten down doors. I've been talking to everyone I know. I've been trying to get a job, but it hasn't happened. And so if right. I'm sitting across from someone and they're asking me, well, you know, Robert, why have you been unemployed for the past year? What is a good response to that question other than, listen, the market is horrible. I've been trying to get a job. I'm just not able to.
The answer to that is you almost have it right, but not quite. I've been looking for a job true for 6 months. This market is very difficult. I had no choice in my having to look for a job. The company that I was with downsized. I've been fortunate enough to get a number of interviews. I've done very well on those interviews. Unfortunately, the situations haven't worked out. I'm in the XYZ business, the manufacturing business, whatever business I've been in, and I've been trying to stay into that business. It's just a very tight market. There are very few opportunities. I've come close, but I haven't landed yet.
And that, you think, would be enough to sort of mitigate the, yes. the perceived risk?
Yes. If okay. you go in and say, you know, this market sucks, the government's lousy, I don't know why the company that I worked for laid me off, they're a bunch of fools, I can't stand the fact that I haven't been able to find, there are no jobs out there, and everybody in the world hates me.
Right. Yeah. Probably not the most effective reply.
Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but some of the stuff I hear is not too far off.
And you know what? We kind of laugh about that response, but you know, maybe after 6 months, a year or two, that's kind of the desperation. You kind of get to the point where you're just like, right. Come on, You know, I've been looking and I just can't get a job already. And, you know, I don't know why. It's just the economy is lousy. And so I can see how one can sort of start to go that path.
Well, and candidates will say things like, you know, it's such a lousy market out there. You don't want to hire me, do you? I mean, you know, I had a candidate the other day. He literally said to one of my clients, and I run an employment agency. That's what we do. We find people jobs, and I've placed more than 8,500 people on a one-on-one basis since 1973. And I've seen just about anything you can imagine. But I had a candidate the other day. He looked at an employer straight in the eye. He said, I'm 62. Is that going to stand in my way?
Well, you know, you bring up an interesting point, because before we were talking about we have to identify the risks in ourselves. Too old,
sure.
Too young, too whatever.
Right, right.
I'm wondering, and maybe you just answered this, would an ineffective strategy be to come in not only knowing what the risks are, but to actually present those risks, yet
no,
then counter them?
No. That's you can present it in a different way and make it a positive. Robert, I've had a lot of experience. One nice thing about being 62 years old is I've been rode hard and put up wet, and I still keep coming back. I've worked for a lot of younger managers before. I've always been able to keep up with them. If you check my references, you'll find I have a tremendous amount of energy, and I've been able to bring all of those experiences, both good ones as well as not so good ones, to the people that I've worked for, and they found out it's really, really, really valuable experience.
You're hired. No, and that's exactly what I'm talking about. So if the interviewer does not bring up those risks, should the onus really be on yourself to present those in such a way that you expose them, but in a very positive way?
Yes. You just have to do it in a row. You can't go in saying, I'm 62. Is that going to stand in my way?
Of course, that's terrible. But the way you presented it, maybe the interviewer wouldn't know exactly how to approach that. Maybe they didn't even really know that was a risk, but they kind of had a feeling that something was a little off. So that, being able to talk about it in the way that you did, highlights the risk, but really, really flips it in such a way that it's not a risk. It's actually an asset.
Right, and you just have to think about these things. You've had 3 jobs in 3 years. What's with that? You know that a hiring authority is going to be concerned that if you've had 3 jobs in 3 years, how long do they think you're going to be with them, right? 1 year, right? So you need to be able to go in and say, you know, and before it's even brought up, unfortunately, Robert, I've had 3 jobs in 3 years. Now, the good news in that is I can't afford to make a mistake. Whoever I go to work for, I'm going to be there at least 5 years. And if I had it to do again, if I knew then what I know now, I wouldn't have done at least one of those. It was a mistake. It was an error in business judgment. I wish I could take it back. But I learned from the experience to be a lot more careful. But that's one of the reasons I'm here talking to you.
Absolutely. So you come up with what the risks are, and then you proactively talk about them in such a way that minimizes, if not makes them an asset.
Exactly.
Okay. And so one of the things you talked about is that there's a lot of fear both on the side of the folks who are unemployed, but of course the people who have the jobs, who have the businesses, who are hiring. And you said that you have to create some kind of massive action. A strategy,
yes.
A process. What is that process?
Yeah, you got to write out a plan. Look, you got to get interviews. You got to perform real well on those interviews. Sell yourself to those interviews. Everything you do centers around that. The first thing you have to do, and I recommend it in all of my books, is come up with a very detailed master plan of goals. Got to write down your goals. Your goal is to get a job. No, it needs to be very specific goals, like how many calls a day are you going to make in order to get interviews? How many interviews do you feel like you need to get a week in order to get hired? How many times do you have to call particular employers once you get an interview? How well do you have to perform on all of those interviews? How well do you have to, or how do you call those people back and follow the process through? and focus on each one of those initial interviews so they become second interviews, so they become third interviews. Once you get that interview, do you research the company, research the person that you're interviewing with, find out exactly what they want and the way they want it, so that when you go in there, you have a master plan of why you would do well for them, what you can do for them that the 43 others they're going to talk to can't. And you've got to get that down in detail. And then you've got to do it over and over and over and over. People have no idea how many interviews it takes to get a job and how long it's going to take. So if you focus on, I got to get a job, it's like eating the elephant in one bite. You can't do it. You got to focus on one thing at a time.
And the other thing that you are talking about, which is very interesting, is the goal, like you said, is not to get a job, because getting a job, you really don't have control over whether you get a job or not. But all of the things that you talked about, how many phone calls am I going to make? How many resumes am I going to send out? How many people within my network am I going to contact? These are all things that you have 100% control over.
Right, exactly. And you got to focus on the number of calls you're making. What you say to prospective employers. You know, hey, Robert, this is Tony. I need a job. What can you do for me? No. And a lot of people approach it that way. Then when Robert thinks not only no, but heck no, or something of that order, and then he hangs up on you, well, no wonder. You haven't called up and said, Robert, look, this is Tony. I'm a great employee, and you really need to consider me because I've done this, this, and this, and the kind of business you're in or whatever. I come up with I recommend it in my books. You know, you come up with I call them lip loads, but you come up with a specific presentation on yourself of what you can do for them that the other people can't. And then you ask for the interview. Robert, I'm going to be in your neighborhood tomorrow. I'd like to come by and see you at 2:00. Now, I recommended this in my first book, and you know, and some people read it and said, "Oh, how campy, how stupid, how ignorant, how really, you know, salesy that is."
Right, well, right.
Yeah, you're right. It is. But then, you know, and one reviewer wrote, "Well, that's really painful." My attitude towards that is, what's more painful, not having a job or picking up the phone and calling Robert and trying to squeeze an interview out of Robert?
And so these, what do you call them? Lip loads.
Lip loads. They're actually scripts.
They're scripts. Okay. And these are scripts, really presentations about yourself. And are these targeted for particular industries or for particular employers?
Yeah, you can do it for anybody as long as you know what you're calling on. Now, if you're in the sales business and I'm an accountant, I need to present my accounting skills. I'm not going to get you to hire me as a sales guy. That's for sure. But you can design them for any industry that you happen to be in.
Okay. And so I like how we're going with this, because we started out assuming that someone already had the interview. They were sitting in front of somebody else. And I think for a lot of people, maybe they're not quite there yet. And their question is, well, how do I get that interview? And so you suggested picking up the phone and making some calls.
Absolutely.
Do you do that before or after you send out the resume?
Before and after.
Okay.
Biggest mistake people make is they keep hitting that send button, confusing activity with productivity. These guys are getting, you know, as I mentioned in the book on unbeatable resumes, they're getting 120 resumes for every opportunity. 60% of the time, that resume is not even read by the person that is going to do the hiring. It's read by somebody in HR or some third party person that somebody tells them, look for this in a resume. And sending a resume is not getting a job. It is one activity that might be involved in getting a job, but you've got to find a hiring authority with pain, that is the need to hire somebody, call them up, explain who you are, why you were a good employee, and try to get an interview with them. Now, if you have to send a resume, then I guess you have to send a resume, but you call them before you send the resume, send the resume, and call them after you send the resume. And then now people come back and say, well, Tony, look at all of these. They got these websites that I got to send my resume to, and I never get any response to it. Yeah, you're right. That's because you're using that silly website. There's 7.5 million businesses in the United States. Do you know what the average size business in the United States, how many people are in it?
I would guess about six.
16.
16.
Okay, you're close. Usually people say, oh, it's 110. No. 16 people. You think those people are sitting there at their website waiting for somebody to send a resume in? No. They're doing whatever they do. They're an engineering firm or a design firm or a drafting firm or a manufacturing firm or a distribution firm or whatever. They're not sitting there waiting for you to send their resume. They just don't do that. So you got to pick up the phone. You got to give them a call. Say, hey, Robert, this is Tony. I'm a good employee. I'd like to come by and talk to you about it.
And so you're getting this information not necessarily off of Monster.com.
No.
They may not even have a job opening or some sort of placement.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying, Tony?
35 or 40% of the placements our organization makes. Now, we're a recruiting firm, admittedly, and I've been doing this for 38 years, and our average recruiter here has been here in our organization for 13 years, and some of the people, our average recruiter in our company has been here 15 years, or been in the business 15 years. 30% of the positions we fill, they don't have an opening when we call. We just call and we present a really good candidate, and we explain to them why you really ought to talk to this candidate. All we're doing, we're selling a date. We're not selling marriage. We're selling the idea that you want to interview this candidate. If it winds up becoming a hire, great. But hey, you need to be exposed to good quality candidates, and these are good quality candidates. Well, I teach people to do that for themselves.
Well, Tony, there's obviously a very good reason why you've been so successful. You've got some really, really insightful ideas that go against, I think, what a lot of people have read and a lot of people have heard out there. Because I love this whole idea of going against the flow. Because if I put an ad, excuse me, on Monster or Craigslist, I will get 400 responses within about 2 days.
Yes.
And so as a candidate, do I want to be with the herd in one of 400 resumes? Of course not. Would you recommend that people not even bother going on Monster, Craigslist, all these other websites, and instead focus their attention on the companies that don't even know that they need to hire somebody?
I think to do both is a good idea. But when I go and I look up your company and I see that you're running an ad, I Google your name. I mean, Paglarini, right?
Right.
Am I pronouncing that correct?
Very well done.
Okay. Pagliarini. All right. Is that better?
Well, you actually don't pronounce the G, but I'm still impressed.
Okay.
Paglarini.
Okay. Paglarini. Okay. So I look up Robert Paglarini, and I find his office. I mean, obviously, he's Googleable, right?
Yep.
And I call you up, and I say, Robert, I understand you're running an ad for an accountant. I'm a really good accountant. When can I come by and talk to you about it? That's not hard.
And so you make these cold calls is really what they
are.
Yeah,
that's exactly. And I know people say, well, I really don't know how to, I don't really know. It's hard to make a cold call. Yeah.
Of course it is.
I didn't say this was easy. I said it was simple. It's very hard, but it is simple. You call people up and now, if you're in a particular industry, you've been in the construction business, and I know people say, oh, construction business. We had a candidate today that got a job in the construction business. I mean, come on. You pick up the people that would be interested in your business, in what you do and the kind of thing you've done, and you cold call them and you talk to the boss, talk to the guy that would be running the company. And you say, you make a presentation on yourself and then see if you can get an appointment with them.
We've all been told that it's not really what you know, it's who you know. And so the day after someone gets laid off, they're on the phone, they're emailing all of their contacts, all of the
Yes.
people that they know. Is there anything special, any special advice or insight you can talk about with regard to contacting your network with regard to a job?
Yes. Yes. Most people do that for the first 60 days and then they stop. And Robert, I got to tell you, the way you've got to do it in a systematic way. First of all, I recommend to people sit down and write out everybody you know, people you worked with, people you've worked for, your in-laws, your outlaws, your people you went to college with, people you went to high school with, people you're in church with, people your kids go to school with, everybody you possibly know, get their phone numbers, keep a record of this, and give them a call every 30 to 45 days.
All right. So what are you saying on that first phone call?
Oh, you call up and say, Robert, this is Tony Bisceri. Your kids and my kids go to school together, you know? And I'm a degreed accountant. I've been with the same firm for the past 8 years. I just got laid off, and I was wondering if you would know of anybody that might need a really good accountant.
Simple, straightforward.
And the first two times I call you, you're going to say, I can't think of anybody. And then you know what? The third time I call, you go, oh, Tony, I was trying to remember your name the other day. You know, my firm has been looking for an accountant for the past 4 months. Yeah, why don't you come in here and enter? And you'll think, well, Robert, I called you, but you just didn't add two and two. Why? You were looking at your emails, or you just came back from lunch or went to lunch, or you had an appointment waiting for you, and you just plain didn't add two and two. So I tell you and preach, call those people every 30 to 45 to 60 days and keep calling them till you find a job, because you'd be surprised how they just don't remember. See, finding a job is your highest priority, but you hiring me or helping me find a job, I mean, how high a priority is that?
Well said, Tony. No, that is
not
absolutely
very
true.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I mean, even good friends. If a good friend loses their job, obviously you want to help them. But it's their top priority. It's probably not yours.
Right. And you just, you know, and so you think, well, I called Robert once. What? Yeah, Robert doesn't even remember you calling him. You caught him in the middle of a meeting or something like that, or you left him a voicemail. Cut it out.
Okay,
you got to call
him
every 30, 45, 60 days.
Some people are listening out there thinking, okay, well, instead of calling everybody, because that's a lot of work,
I don't want to bother people.
No. You know where I'm going with this. What if went on Facebook and said, I'm looking for a job? Tell me what is so wrong with that strategy?
Nothing, but it isn't going to get you anywhere.
All right, so it's not going to work.
We did it for that last book that I wrote. We surveyed 6,000 candidates that have signed up with us over the last 2 years. We're a pretty big agency. We see lots of people. I found two people that said they got any kind of an interview or job opportunity off of any social networking other than LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn seems to be very effective, and LinkedIn seems to be something that, for now, works really, really well. Not against it. I use it. I think it's great. But the other stuff, Facebook, Twitter, all of that, I can't find anybody that's found a job that way. So you say, well, Tony, you're not talking to kids that are 25 or younger. That's probably true. Okay, so maybe they are. I just can't, and I know that there are a lot of companies out there that say that they have a whole program there to developing around social networking. I don't know how successful it is or isn't. I just know from the candidates we surveyed, we couldn't find anybody that gets a job that way. Now, LinkedIn is another issue. How long that'll be really successful, I can't really tell you, but nothing in the world beats picking up the phone and saying, Robert, I'm Tony, I need to come see you.
Okay, so you saved a lot of people a lot of time by saying, let's forget Twitter, let's forget Facebook. It's probably going to be a waste of time and ineffective. LinkedIn, possibly. How can someone use LinkedIn in addition to picking up the phone and calling people?
Finding out people you know, where they work, where they used to work, people you used to work with, who they're connected with, getting an introduction to Robert. You know, when I call up and say, Robert, you and I worked with Gino. Gino worked at a company with you, and he worked with me. He said, I ought to give you a call. You're automatically going to pay more attention to my call if Gino suggested that I call than you are if I just cold call you. So you can find out where all of your contacts have moved before. Oh, it's a wealth of information. And I got to tell you, it's simple and it's really, really, really easy. Now, again, you can spend all day doing that, and that may not get you very far. You got to do a lot of this kind of stuff, and you got to do a bunch of it. Hey, if you go on Facebook and you get an interview off of Facebook and you get hired, God bless you. You know, I'm not saying it won't work. I'm just saying that probabilities aren't as great as what you might think they are. Sending a resume to somebody. I had a candidate the other day that said he submitted a resume to a company. They called him off the resume and they hired him. God bless him. Maybe it works. So you got to try lots of different things, at realizing that there's no magic bullet that's gonna be perfect for you.
And what do you tell the candidate who had maybe a long track record at a company, did really well, moved up the chain there, got laid off, and now is really struggling to find a job that's comparable and is wondering, should I drop down a level or two or three just to get a job, or will that hurt me in the long run?
A level two, three, or four. Whatever you need to do to get a job, because it's an act of physics, the cream rises. Too many candidates come out of a position that is a mid, first level, second level, third level management position, expecting there to be a job like that because they, quote, have paid their dues, unquote. That's a lot of malarkey. Those are the first groups of people that most companies lay off, are the second and third line managers, because they feel like they might be able to get rid of them. So sometimes you're going to have to start all over. Can't tell you the number of candidates I've interviewed that have been out of work 6, 7, 8 months and created themselves a terrible problem because they didn't, when they first started looking for a job, go to work at a job that was one or two or three steps below of where they were. I totally recommend that, because you have no idea how long this it's going to be before you find one, and you're competing with hordes of other people that got laid off for the same reason. There is none of us, you, me, anybody, has any intrinsic value in the marketplace. It's like, what's your house worth? Your house is worth absolutely nothing until the day you sell it. That's what your house is worth. Now, you can sit there and speculate on what it's worth, and you can imagine what it's worth, and you can get all kind of comparables of what you think it's worth, but until you sell it, it's absolutely has no intrinsic value. And the same is true with you and your skills. I can't tell you the number of people that think, well, I've paid my dues and I've been with my company 16 years and I've scratched and clawed and fought to get to where I am, and I need to find a job like that. Well, not that easy to do.
Not that easy to do at all. So you've written an entire book about creating an unbeatable resume. And yes, Anyone who's listening or reading, you got to check this book out. I mean, it is a really, really well-written book, and it's thick, and it's got all kinds of great examples and really fantastic tips that we can't possibly go through all of them on this call today. But I'm wondering, Tony, are there a couple of tips that you could provide people when they're thinking about creating a resume?
Yes. Keep in mind, and this is one of the most important parts of the book. Now, I come from a business where I'm actually using resumes every day to help people find jobs. I'm not a resume writer. I help people find jobs. A lot of resume writers and people like that are going to sell you what you think looks good. But the truth is, what really works is a very simple resume that can be scanned and skipped on the internet. 95% of the resumes that are going to be reviewed are going to be reviewed online. We read things differently We don't read things the same way when they're online as we do when they are in our hand. When they're in your hand, you read across the page. When they're on the internet, you skip and scan down a page. We start out, psychologists show us, that we start out in the very middle of the page, and then we move to the left and go up, move to the left, and we go up to the top of the page. That's how a resume is reviewed online. So you want to put the most important parts of your resume in the very middle of the first page of your resume. All of these objectives and summaries and all of that garbage that people put on the top of their resume, no, no, no. It's not going to get read. It's not going to get paid attention to. So that's the first thing. The second thing, it's what's most important after that, is make sure that your resume states very, very clearly who you worked for, what that company did, what you do, what you've done for the company, and how you've been successful in that company, so that a high school senior, not your kid, but a high school senior could look at that resume and know who you worked for, what that company did, what you did for them, and how successful you were at doing it. If you can't do that, that resume is going to get skipped, and it's going to go to the delete file along with the 130 others.
So you talked about, and this is fascinating, about the difference between reading a resume that's in your hand versus online.
Oh, yeah.
And so you suggest putting the most important thing in the middle of the page.
Right. Because psychologically, that's the first thing that people look at when they look at anything online.
And so I'm just trying to visualize what that resume might look like. What could be the most important thing?
Who you've worked for, what you've done, and how successful you've been most recently.
The most recently.
That's what a company wants to know.
And you suggest using reversed chronological order.
In fact, we did a survey in that book with 4,100 employers about what they liked and what they didn't like. 86% of them wrote back that they can't stand functional resumes. And that's a functional resume is where you put all your attributes of what you've done in this great big laundry list. And down at the bottom of the page, you put the names of the companies you worked for and how long you were there. They hate them. They get deleted. They don't get read. So it's reverse chronological order. The job you're presently on or you've been on most recently, a very clearly stated what the company does, what you did there, and how successful you were. And I can't tell you the number of companies the number of resumes I've gotten that have things written on them from 2008 to present, and they have the company, Other 8 Hours LLC. That's it.
And they're thinking, well, what does that company do?
And nobody says, in parentheses after it, this is what the company does. They act like everybody's supposed to know that that's what, where they work. Well, who's going to pay attention to that? They got 130 resumes they're reviewing. They're not going to do that.
Well, so technically, everyone should know what Other 8 Hours LLC does. But, we'll just leave that
they
alone.
They should.
I mean, Other 8 Hours, Disney, they're very, very, popular.
Very, very close. Very close. It's the same, in the same part of the world, right?
Exactly. Right?
So, I mean, it's close, but if they don't know, and if it isn't clear on the resume, then you're dead in the water. And most, I'm amazed. Even candidates that I've known for a number of years, they write down the names of the companies like everybody in the world ought to know what the company did. Cut it out.
Make it easy. Make it, like you said, as a high school senior could look at it and know exactly what this person did, when they did it, and what they did for the company.
Exactly.
And any kind of gimmicks that actually work out there for getting a job, writing a resume, getting the interview, because we all hear about crazy things. People have billboards and they put them up, or they walk down the street in a chicken suit.
All that.
Is it all just garbage to get
attention?
No,
that kind of thing works better than you think. I had a rugby buddy one time. He threw a party for himself, bought a couple kegs of beer, hired a cheap band, rented a warehouse, put his resume on napkins, invited every body he ever knew. And he got a lot of interviews, ended up getting a job that way, and everybody had a good time.
Wow. Okay. So these candidates. Things can work.
Oh, yeah. You just got to, not too long ago, at least two or three times a year, our office is near a big intersection here in Dallas. We get somebody that, you know, gets a billboard or one of those sandwich boards and stands there in the middle of the thing and says, you know, accountant for hire, brand new MBA, will work for food. And you'd be shocked. People buy that kind of stuff. Now, you want to be a little careful. A billboard's a little pricey. And I have seen some situations where people have done that kind of thing, but they haven't said what they, the first kid that I helped out on the Dr. Phil show, he rented a flatbed trailer in Austin, Texas, and he sat on it, you know, for a number of days in the August heat in Dallas, Texas. And he wrote a banner, but the banner put his website, but he didn't say what he was. And if the banner had said accountant for hire, I'll work for you, it would have worked. But no, he put his name in www. As though people were going to stop and look up his website and find out who he was. No. Be smart about it.
Be smart. And so how important is a personal website when you're job hunting?
You know, I just read another book where these guys spent four chapters talking about developing your website and developing your blog and developing your personal brand and all of that. Yeah, right. I mean, so you got a job and you're trying to keep the job you got. You're also trying to find a new job, and you're going to sit around developing a website, writing a blog, developing your personal brand. Oh, cut it out. Who's got that kind of time? Now, I guess if that's what you want to do, I guess you can, but that, you know, the goal here is to find a job. And again, sometimes that can be confusing, activity with productivity. So, I mean, it's nice. I've seen candidates that have written blogs. They don't say anything. If your blog doesn't really say something, and if it doesn't really enrich people's lives when they read it, they're going to read it once and go, what's with this guy? You know, I'm not going to just pay any attention to this.
It'll do more harm than good.
It'll do more harm than good. And I've seen that happen a lot.
And really. Video resumes. That sums that up.
Okay, here, do yourself a favor. You can do this real quick. Google video resumes and look at a couple of them.
Yeah.
You're going to hire those people? Nah, you're not even going to interview them. No.
Tony, this is going to be the greatest compliment I could give you. You are old school, and I love it.
Well,
because it's effective, right? Because love your comment about activity is not productivity. You can spend a lot of your day doing all kinds of fun and fancy new things, and yet at the end of the day, still not pick up the phone and talk to someone who can actually get you a job.
Exactly.
And so what you're talking about makes a lot of sense. And if someone wants to learn more about you, about your work, they can, of course, go to Tony Beshara. That's TonyBeshara.com. And maybe you can talk a little bit about this job search solution.
It's a 45-hour online program that could teach anybody how to find a job. It's developing a systematic approach to finding a job, a systematic approach to getting interviews, what to say, how to do it, and it is a detailed step-by-step, A, B, C, D, E, and you just follow the steps, and if you follow the steps and follow the system, the result ends up taking care of itself.
And so more information can be found at
jobsearchsolution.com. Thejobsearchsolution.com, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. So it's thejobsearchsolution.com. Okay.
Right.
Well, this has been fantastic. I mean, just really, I think you've dispelled a lot of myths out there, and you've really broken it down. This is a lot. It's hard work. You got to pick up the phone, use a process, focus on things that you have control over versus things that you don't, and realize that there's fear, not just on your side of the table, but on the other side. You have to dispel some of that fear by coming up with your biggest risks and looking at ways how you can turn those around to be assets.
Exactly.
And so thank you, Tony. This has been really, really great. And I know our members are just going to eat this up. So thank you very much.
A pleasure, Robert, anytime.